Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by talking with Jim Triola, the National Commander of the American Legion. Then we'll meet Brian Kelly, the President of Military Officers Association of America. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce the National Commander of the American Legion, Navy vet Jim Triola. He served in the Navy both on active duty and in the reserves, and as a longtime Legion member, I'm delighted you could join us. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Dennis. I appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning. Jim, give us a quick review of your time in the Navy. What'd you do? Why'd you join?
I joined to make, my brother was in the Navy, and I joined to make a difference. The same reason why I joined the American Legion. I felt that America needs sailors, you know, America needs service members. So I joined to make a difference. I enlisted in 1968, and I went on active duty in actually January of 1970. And I was stationed aboard the USS Nitro, an ammunition ship, home ported out of Davisville, Rhode Island, and did two med cruises with that ship between 70 and 71. And when I got out in November of 1971 from active duty, I served until 1974 in the Navy Reserve.
Well, we need Americans who want to serve our country, who are proud of it.
And absolutely.
You're a role model. I call those people patriotic Americans, and there are people who would like to serve, but for reasons physically or otherwise, they couldn't. They're still patriots, but we need people that can and will and did serve. Jim, the American Legion is our nation's largest and oldest veterans organizations, and as a commander, I'm sure you had some goals in mind that you have been and are working on. What are some of those that you've been seeking to do during your time as commander?
Dennis, we have a number one priority in the American Legion. We've had it now for the last 3 or 4 years, and that's to prevent veteran suicide. So we initiated a program called Be the One about 3 years ago, Be the One to Save a Life. And it's designed to remove the stigma of a veteran stepping forward, looking for help. And we decided to make, we have 12,500 Legion posts all throughout the United States and another 1,500 abroad. And we decided that we would make them into resource centers for veterans at risk. So who better to talk to a veteran that's possibly considering hurting themselves or even worse, taking their own lives than another veteran, a Legionnaire or anybody in the community that has experienced military life? Is a camaraderie there? You know, when a veteran, if you finally get a veteran that will step forward, I think that we understand them better than anybody else. And then we can get them the help they need within their own communities. So we're having it's resonating very well all around the United States. We've made some great strides. And I can explain to you how it all works if you'd like.
Well, you know, yeah, let's do that, because this is something that is incredibly important right now. So, yeah, Jim, take a minute and lay that out for us.
Okay, so since 9/11, we've lost 125,000 veterans or service members to suicide. It's a horrible, horrible number. And we've decided that we're going to start a peer-to-peer program. It all started about 4 or 5 years ago when we instituted the buddy checks. And buddy checks are basically well-being phone calls just to find out how your fellow veteran is doing and if there's anything we can do to help. So we added on Be the One to that. And the whole idea of it is to start a conversation with a veteran, know what questions to ask, know what to listen for. And once we identify that veteran at risk, we felt that since all these Legion posts are located in communities where they know where all the help is, that we could have that veteran start their therapy within that community. You know, sometimes the VA can take quite a while to get you an appointment with a mental health therapist through no fault of their own. You know, we all know there's staffing shortages all over the United States, and it's no different for the VA. And so we start them on local therapies, whatever that may be. It could be a social worker, it could be a veteran service officer, a hospital that specializes in that, anything like that, that can get them at least on the road to recovery. And the other thing we can't forget, Dennis, is that the family members, some of the family members are suffering almost as bad as that veteran is, because when that veteran comes home from service and is not the same as when they went out, it's very disturbing for the family. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know anything about military life. They don't know what possibly caused the problem. And if the veteran won't speak up, they're even more lost. So we got to make sure we identify those people too and get them the help they want. And this applies to active duty service members too. I don't know if you've read the papers recently, but since the first quarter of 2023, there's more suicides in the active duty service members than the one was last quarter of last year. And they're part of this as well. It's the military is doing a much better job of identifying mental health problems. They're getting the service members the help they need immediately. As a matter of fact, I believe the Navy and the Marine Corps just signed on to a law that came out called the Brandon Act that helps service members get the help they need. So that's part of this. We had the VA just co-branded with us on the Be the One initiative, and that'll really help us get the word out for this. They have 9 million veterans that are signed up to the healthcare system, so that's going to really help this a great deal. And we've also just signed an agreement with USAA, who has put together a coalition of veteran service organizations, subject matter experts, nonprofits, called Face to Fight. And it's a very similar program, and we're looking forward to working with them to get this problem resolved as well.
Yes, they do a good job. I've talked to them too. I'm delighted. And my experience, my post, I get buddy calls. I'm not surprised, because we're a pretty gung-ho post, but I'm glad to hear that we're doing the kinds of things that you guys have described for us. We're running out of time. If there are any vets out there who aren't Legion members but want to be or want to learn more, what can they do? All I did was walk into a Legion post. I knew where it was, and I just walked in. Is there a better solution?
There is a website called BeTheOne.org. That's for the veteran suicide part of it. And if you want more information, go to Legion.org. And Legion.org, right on the front page of that site, there's a membership link. We'll link it in there, and it can tell you all about what we do. And or the other way is, and this is actually the better way, walk into a post, because that post will tell you what they're doing in their local communities to help children, youth, and our veterans. Well, so either way, so Legion.org does that as well.
Well, it worked for me. I just walked in, and for some reason, they put up with me. I don't know why. Jim, thank you. Thank you for taking time to share about our nation's American Legion. Thank you for your service and your time in uniform. And thank you for your concern and your passion for American veterans. You make me even prouder to be a member of the American Legion. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me this morning. I appreciate it.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time, do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
GNS, a Korean-owned company operating in North America, will be supporting an effort to honor and respect the veterans who fought in the Korean War. This effort is done in conjunction with an organization called Project Soldier. Project Soldier is a nonprofit organization based in the US and Korea. Since 2013, it has been taking photographs and videos of Korean War veterans all over the world. GNS North America is honored to host Project Soldier August 6th to 15th in Michigan and Ontario. Project Soldier wants to interview and take photos of these veterans. They will then receive pictures and have their experience memorialized, which proudly tells of their sacrifice for freedom. If anyone knows any Korean War veterans nearby, please contact Joshua Roberts at jroberts@gnsauto.com. jroberts@gnsauto.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to Vetted Veterans Program's mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome Air Force Lieutenant General Brian Kelly to the show. General Kelly is the president of the Military Officers Association of America, an organization that does a lot of good for our country and one I belong to. So welcome to the show, General.
Well, thanks, Dennis. I really appreciate it.
General Kelly, start by telling us about your time in uniform. Why did you join the Air Force? What did you do? Where'd you serve?
Yeah, thanks. You know, like many young folks in America, I was looking for some money to go to school. And at the time, I had an opportunity to apply for, and I was lucky enough to get an ROTC scholarship to go to the University of Notre Dame. And so I went and did my school time there. And I thought I would then serve in the military for my 4 year. I had a 4 year commitment, and I thought I would go and serve. And then when I was done, I would get out and go do other things. As it turned out, I absolutely loved my 4 years. I loved the people I was working with. I loved the missions that I had. I loved the impacts that we were making, those kind of things. And so I told myself, let's do one more and let's do one more and let's do one more. And when I looked up, I was 33 and a half years in the United States Air Force. And I ended up as my last position as a three-star general in charge of, as the deputy chief of staff, in charge of all the personnel and manpower and family programs for the United States Air Force. And it was a great, great opportunity, a great responsibility to help take care of folks, help put airmen into the places that we need them to be in the United States Air Force to get the nation's business done.
Well, that certainly makes sense. And I've talked to a number of people who said, yeah, I got in not expecting to stay, but I never got around to getting out. And then all of a sudden, I completed a career. So I do understand that. Okay, sir, let's get to MOA. What's its purpose? Why does MOA exist? What's its mission?
Yeah, thanks. You know, first, MOA is a member organization of 360,000 members. And although we're an officer association, we're not an association about officers. It's an association of officers who recognize their responsibility, much like when they were serving and while they're still serving, to take care of the entire force. And so MOA is focused on preserving and protecting the earned benefits that all of those military members, those serving, the veterans, our retirees, their families, our surviving spouses really earned as part of their service. And MOA's mission is to make sure that those earned benefits are in place. So not only to take care of these current folks, but to make sure that those in the future see and can recognize the value of military service and continue to serve. And so we do that through advocacy. We do a lot of advocacy work with the congressional branch, as well as the executive branches in the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs Administrations to make sure that we can protect and preserve those earned benefits. We also do through education and outreach. We run a scholarship fund, a charity, if you will, to provide scholarships to the children of military families and military members who are out there, recognizing that their sacrifices are sometimes very difficult and their family members often need a little bit of help in getting their education and things. So we run about a $12 million a year scholarship fund that we do for military children, military families. And then we also run a second charity that helps veterans and others throughout the military community, all services, all ranks that are out there that might run into, for instance, a crisis program. You know, say they encounter a hurricane or a flood or something like that, and they don't have the means to help themselves. We find that there's veterans all the time who don't have a VA disability rating or aren't retired from their military service and are in need of somebody to help them. And so we found almost 12 million veterans out there that we like to reach out to and help when they're in their times of need. So MOA does a lot of education, a lot of advocacy work, and a lot of good on behalf of the entire military community.
Well, that's why I joined, and that's why I'm still a member. So yes, sir, on that. And one of the things I appreciate that you said is that we do recognize that family members serve too, and we've got to be there for them, and we are there for them. That's one aspect that is incredibly important to me and to people that I know. So thank you for bringing that point up. What are the main focuses now? You can't do all things. There's a whole bunch of stuff that needs fixing. You can't aim at everything and hit it. What are you aiming at right now?
Yeah, I'd say the overarching thing, as I mentioned, with this idea of preserving the earned benefits, is this idea that the all-volunteer force, which our nation's had for 50 years, has now recently come under some stress. And really, the genesis of the all-volunteer force is not only those people who have served, but those people who have served, and making sure that their experience while they're serving, and more importantly, their experience after they've served, allows them in turn to recognize and recommend service to the next generation. And we want them to say to the next generation of folks, yes, my experience was great. My country, my nation kept their commitments and took care of me both while serving and after. And so I want to join. So some of the things that we're working on to do that is right now is the STAR Act. This is an act that says if you are an injured combat veteran and you have the opportunity to retire from the military as a result of your injury, so you are retired from the military based on your disability, that you should receive both your retirement from the military, adjusted as it is, as well as your VA disability. We think those are two different things. Your VA disability designed to make you whole and your injuries whole when you're done. Your military retirement, thank you and honored for the earned benefits you had and the service that you provided. Right now, those are decremented to each other. And we believe that there's over 60,000 combat injured veterans out there who ought to get the full retirement, both from their military retirement as well as their disability. So the Richard Starr Act is a big one. It's an important one for us that's out there today. Another one that we're working on that's really important to us is to help our young veterans and our young service members in particular, given the economic problems that have happened. And one of the things that we see is as the housing market has gotten more difficult out there and inflation has kicked in, many of our younger service members and families find it difficult to find affordable housing. In the past, the military, the Department of Defense, did some cost savings and reduced the money that they give to those service members and the families, their basic allowance for housing, if you will, their BAH. They had reduced that down about 5% starting in 2014 timeframe. We believe it's time for that to be restored, that those members and families ought to get their full housing benefits, even if it's only restored 1% at a time to get us back up to the full amount. But that impact to housing not only causes those families to have stress, but it trickles down to other things like food insecurity, being able to save for retirement or being able to clothe your children, all those kind of things where we see particularly younger service members struggling as a result of not having their full housing benefits. So we're working on that one as well.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've picked some key things to shoot at. We're getting towards the end of our time. Do you have a wrap-up point you'd like to make? One, please include how listeners can either learn more or join about MOA, and any final points you'd like to make.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me on today, Dennis, and thanks for your service and thanks for your membership at MOA. As I mentioned, I think this idea that we protect the earned benefits is really important. And I think it was George Washington who told us way back when the country was founded that how we take care of veterans and those serving is going to be a report card on how well the country is as a whole. And so we think it's really important. You can get in touch with us at MOA, M-O-A-A. .org.org. And there's all kinds of opportunities to join. There's three different levels of membership depending on where you are and how committed you are to things going on, how much time you have to spend. But we certainly feel that our 360,000 members that are out there and others, what an important cause for us to take care of the military community and make sure that those who are serving today and those who have served recommend service for those who we need to serve tomorrow. So thanks again for having me on, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for what you're doing for our nation today and for your service when you were in uniform. I need to have MOA on more often because you do such good things for our nation, and we need to get the word out. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. And it's now time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back to the show, bro. Glad you could join us.
Great to be with you, Denny. Always a pleasure.
Chris, we're going to talk about the Battle of Vicksburg. But before we do that, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay, I graduated from West Point like you did, only a few years later, and branched aviation, did all the normal aviation stuff for a career, I guess you could say, and my career highlights probably are commanding an aviation battalion in Iraq during the surge, which of course led to some other opportunities, and I commanded a brigade, and then got an opportunity to be a general officer and did some interesting things in NATO and the Pentagon and one of the combatant commands. So really interesting, fascinating journey.
Now, take us to the Battle of the Month. As I recollect, Vicksburg was a hugely important battle in the Civil War, and that it was like 7 or 8 or 9 months long. It ended up with the city being surrounded and held in until they finally gave up, and they gave up on the 4th of July. And the citizens were so upset by all that, they didn't even celebrate the 4th of July for years and years, maybe even 100 years. Do I remember that right?
Yeah, pretty close. I don't remember exactly how many years, but you're right. It was so decimating, demoralizing for the population of Vicksburg that they didn't celebrate the 4th of July for years and years and years. So, yeah, it's July's battle because it ended on the 4th of July, 1863. And as I like to start, why is this important? Why should Americans know it? Well, as you mentioned, and this is a pivotal battle of the Civil War, a truly pivotal battle. It split the Confederacy in two. It denied them the use of the Mississippi River, which was vital during that time of history for moving supplies and commerce and troops and everything. And it created an invasion path to the Deep South, you know, from the West, so you could operate independent of the Eastern theater to get at the Deep South. Also, I think this is a study in Ulysses S. Grant's coming of age as a strategic level general officer. He's brilliant in this campaign for a lot of reasons, but that's one of the reasons I love it. And speaking of campaigns, it's also, in my opinion, one of the top military campaigns in history because Grant demonstrates flexibility and tenacity and operational tempo, keeping the Confederates off balance, maneuver, deception and joint operations with the Navy. So it's got a lot packed into this 8-month campaign, Siege Vicksburg.
Take us there. I mean, okay. This is quite a fight.
Yeah, it's quite a fight. And there's lots of subplots and stories, which are interesting. But, you know, in the interest of time, the quick summary is Grant, everyone knew that Vicksburg was going to be the major campaign objective at some point in the Western theater of the Civil War. It was just that important. It was a stronghold on high ground of the Mississippi River at a bend in the river where boats had to slow down and everything. So it was perfect. It had to be taken. So the task falls to Grant in July of, well, actually in November of 1862, he starts his move. And he does it, he has to do a few things. And so I can't bore you with all the details, but initially he takes a direct route from around Memphis south overland along a railroad to attack the citadel at Vicksburg. And that ends up kind of floundering and he has to adjust. He sends Sherman down the river as he's going to, you know, try a different approach. He's going to hold Pemberton's forces on the east. He sends Sherman down. That fails. The third big move is he starts doing all these. Once he relocates across from Vicksburg, his army starts doing all these river bayou projects to work around the constraint of that turn bend in the river under the guns of Vicksburg to get at the eastern side of the river to get a toehold for the attack. So he's doing that for months, but none of those pan out. And so lastly, he works with Admiral Porter, and Admiral Porter runs the guns of Vicksburg from north to south and gets his boats south of the city where he can link up with Grant's army and ferry the troops across the shore. So he creates his toehold finally after months and months of hard work and flexibility. He's finally across the river. Now, it's just a masterful campaign up to this point in how Grant is flexible and reacting to operational constraints and things like that. So as he gets across the river, he decides two really important things that make this campaign unique. He cuts loose from his supply lines, which nobody at the time is doing. I mean, that's a big deal to feed a, you know, 60,000 strength army from your day pack, you know? And so he does that. And he decides to attack Jackson, Mississippi first, which is kind of the gateway and the resupplies and the communication center into Vicksburg, which was the indirect approach rather than direct approach going after Vicksburg. Well, that pays dividends, but only because Grant manages to move 200 miles and fight five battles in 18 days from the 1st to the 18th of May to keep attacking and keeping the Confederates off balance. So it's just a masterful display of lots of general officer competencies, you could say, and flexibility and thinking, but yet an offensive mindset. And after two costly assaults on the city itself, Grant has to accept a siege approach. And 47 days later, the starving survivors march out of Vicksburg. You know, they were paroled, but it was a major loss to the Confederacy. It put the Mississippi River essentially in Union hands, and it was just a debilitating loss in the Western theater. And that combined with Gettysburg, which was happening in the East, is really what made 1863 the pivotal year of the entire Civil War.
Well, yes, sir. And I've heard some people criticize Grant for taking so long to do it. Well, nobody has a perfect plan the first time they try it. The trick is, can you keep moving until you achieve goal? Can you learn from your mistakes and keep moving? Boy, did he role model that, didn't he?
Boy, he sure did. I mean, he knew his objective and he tried experiments and operational approaches to get after his objective. And he was undaunted and he created great diversions to keep Pemberton off balance when he made his final crossing. So, I mean, he just added all the elements that a good general should add into a campaign and kept at it, but by God, he got it.
And you pointed out before when we were talking, the Battle of Gettysburg ended on the 3rd of July, and that was closer to Washington, D.C., got all the headlines, and it was certainly a pivotal battle, but it really doesn't fall into the same category as the success at Vicksburg, does it?
That's right. I mean, they're different. Obviously, people are familiar with Gettysburg, but it was a strategic morale boost to the Northern cause. Whereas, Vicksburg was actually not only a morale boost, but a real operational victory. I mean, operational defeat on the Confederacy that had significant immediate consequences to their prosecution of the war. So big difference between the two in terms of, operational effects. But yeah, Gettysburg overshadowed Vicksburg even at the time. But, the noose was tightening a lot, over the Confederacy's neck really quickly now.
And it was just a great battle. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Chris, take a minute and tell us about Battle Digest. It's a great option for folks who want to learn more about our nation's battles. I really recommend it. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, my passion now is Battle Digest. It is my effort to condense and create enjoyable, simple summaries of these wonderful historical battles. So you can literally become a very knowledgeable person on all aspects of Vicksburg in a 20, 30 minute read if you pick up a Battle Digest publication that I produce. So I hope your listeners are interested enough in our great history to go to battledigest.com. It's just battledigest.com. And there's videos and it shows you the product and it's wonderful. And I hope that your listeners can take advantage of it. Battledigest.com.
I really recommend it. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Mary Lou, an Army daughter, was amazed by the interview with the Korean War vet. His story was amazing. He didn't go to basic training?
Mary Lou, yes. Howard is an amazing man who served our nation very well, and no, he didn't go to basic training and went to combat.
Peter, an Army dad, liked hearing about Concerned Veterans for America. It sounds like a good outfit.
Peter's CVA is a very good outfit that every American should check out. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
Well, Colonel, on 27 July 1863, during the Civil War, General Beauregard asked Captain Tucker, commanding Confederate naval forces at Charleston, to place your two ships, the Ironclads, in a position immediately contiguous to Cummings Point. Beauregard noted that the addition of the Ironclads would materially strengthen our means of defense and the Confederate hold on Morris Island. Tucker subsequently replied, "Flag Officer Ingram, commanding station Charleston, has informed me officially that he has but 80 tons of coal to meet all demands, including the ironclads, and has admonished me of the necessity of economy in consumption. However, a fresh supply of coal arrived in August in time to enable the ironclads to help evacuate Fort Wagner. Critical shortages of coal hampered Southern efforts afloat, and even that which was obtained was soft rather than hard coal. It burned with a heavy smoke and was much less efficient than anthracite coal."
And that's not to mention the fact that it contaminated the air.
Yeah.
And on July 25th, 1864, during the Civil War, boats from the USS Hartford, the Monconella, and Sebago, commanded by Rear Admiral Farragut's Flag Lieutenant J.C. Watson, reconnoitered the Mobile Bay area in an attempt to discover the type and number of water mines laid by Confederates off of Fort Morgan. Watson and his men located and cut loose many of the torpedoes, as they were called in those days. They were aided by the fact that a number were inoperative. This hazardous work was indispensable to the success of the Navy's continuing operations against Mobile. Several similar night operations were conducted.
And on 25 July 1866, the rank of admiral was created. David Farragut was appointed the first admiral in the U.S. Navy, and Ulysses Grant was named general of the army, the first officer to hold the rank. These two senior officers were honored for their great performance during the Civil War. Our nation owes them a great deal.
Indeed, we do. On the 25th of July, 1898, during the Spanish-American War, U.S. forces launched their invasion of Puerto Rico, the 108-mile-long, 40-mile-wide island that was one of Spain's two principal possessions in the Caribbean. With little resistance and only seven deaths, our troops, under General Nelson Miles, were able to secure the island by mid-August. After the signing of an armistice with Spain, American troops raised the U.S. flag over the island, formalizing U.S. authority over its 1 million inhabitants. In December, the Treaty of Paris was signed, ending the Spanish-American War and officially approving the secession of Puerto Rico to the U.S.
Have you ever been to Puerto Rico, Colonel?
Yes, briefly, on a cruise stopover.
You know, I think I'd like to do that someday. It's warm. I'd like to do it in February. Let's go.
Yep, brush up on your Spanish first.
Okay. And on 27 July 1909, Orville Wright tested the U.S. Army's first airplane, flying himself and a passenger for 1 hour, 12 minutes, and 40 seconds over Fort Myer, Virginia. Would you like to have been the passenger on that flight, not knowing how safe it would be, especially when landing? We salute those fellows.
We sure do. And no, I would not like to have been them.
Colonel, you're airborne. Come on.
Yes, but no, I don't think they had parachutes then.
Okay.
On 28 July 1931, Congress made the Star Spangled Banner our second national anthem. The song, America, called, you know, My Country, Tis of Thee, Sweet Land of Liberty, of Thee I Sing, had a strong link to the British national anthem, but it served with the Star Spangled Banner as one of our de facto national anthems for 100 years until the Star Spangled Banner became the official song. I enjoy and appreciate both songs.
And on 25 July 1944, during World War II, the U.S. First Army began Operation Cobra. The main attack was made west of St. Lo by the U.S. 7th Corps, with 8th Corps on the right flank and 13th Corps on the left flank. A massive bombardment preceded the assault. Over 3,000 planes are involved, including 1,500 heavy bombers of our 8th Air Force. Some American casualties resulted from the bombers releasing their load short of their target. Regardless, the American forces made good progress during this huge offensive.
Huge, all right. 3 corps, that's got to be over hundreds of thousands of men. Wow. And on the 26th of July, 1945, during World War II, the heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis delivered the consignment of uranium-235 needed to assemble the first operational atomic bomb to the American base in Tainan. It delivered the goods and shortly thereafter was sunk by the Japanese.
And on 25 July 1946, we detonated a second atomic bomb at Bikini Atoll in the Pacific in the first underwater test of the device. We knew other nations would seek to have nuclear weapons, and we needed to keep working to improve and develop our weapons.
And we were right. They did, and we did. And on the 26th of July, 1948, President Harry Truman, in Executive Order Number 9981, called for the equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons of the armed forces without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. Our military was desegregated. The rest of the nation would follow with the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
And on 27 July 1953, after 3 years of a bloody and frustrating war, the U.S., the People's Republic of China, North Korea, and South Korea agreed to an armistice, bringing the fighting in Korean War to an end. The armistice ended America's first experiment with the Cold War concept of limited war. Because no peace treaty was ever signed, officially, the war still continues.
And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it. and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Wow, this one's interesting. Employees at a Huntington Beach jewelry store fought back against a smash-and-grab robbers on Sunday. It happened around noon at the Princess Bridge Diamonds jewelry store in the Belaterra shopping mall. The video shows four suspects walk into the store. The first suspect smashes the front jewelry case with a hammer, and at that point, a store employee starts attacking one of the robbery suspects when another employee joins in kicking and swinging. A third employee is seen joining in the attack with a stool. The employees were able to fight off the would-be robbers. Nothing was stolen. No injuries were reported. Police were quick to warn that resisting in a situation like this is dangerous.
Thanks, Colonel. A smash and grab is a particular form of burglary or looting that involves smashing a barrier, usually a display window in a shop or a showcase, grabbing valuables, and then making a quick getaway without concern for setting off alarms or creating noise. Smash and grabs have been steadily on the rise over the past 3 years. Most people believe that smash and grabs are a fairly new form of crime, but that's just not the case. Smash and grabs have been around for hundreds of years, and they happen all over the world, not just in the U.S. Smash and grab raids became more common in the 1930s and 1940s and evolved into a crime called ram raiding, where trucks are smashed into storefronts and the truck bed is then filled with merchandise. Most recently, the flash mob has been employed by young people to run into a store in overwhelming numbers and steal anything within reach. What does all this mean? Well, it simply means that the rule of law is breaking down and we all must change the way we live or become victims. It's interesting to note that many times the police, who are tasked with enforcing a law, instruct citizens not to resist. Instead, they are advised to cooperate with the criminals to prevent injury to themselves. I question the wisdom of that advice. While it's true that cooperating in most cases gives you a better chance of escaping immediate injury, it also has the unintended consequence of emboldening criminals to commit more brazen and violent crimes in epidemic proportions. Instead, I would advise citizens to organize themselves in mutual defense, just as the three employees did in today's story. There were four invaders and only three defenders, but that was enough to drive the criminals away. As a kid, I was taught that good always prevails, but that's simply not always the case. In reality, good can prevail, but only when it's stronger and more courageous than evil. If the rule of law is to survive, more citizens need to get trained and help each other out. These three employees worked together to drive away evil. They were strong and courageous, and Front Lines of Freedom salutes their virtuous defense.
Yes, indeed. Our movie of the month is Two Strangers Who Met Five Times. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. I'm going to review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll discuss the state of our nation with Congressman and retired General Jack Bergman. Then Chris Moore will share leaving real messages for your family when you deploy. Then we'll learn about an event honoring our troops who served in the Korean War, hosted by a Korean-owned company. And then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase the book at frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall. Be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.